From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
If you love board games and card games, well, Essen's Spiel for 2016 is happening on the other side of the planet right now. And I want everyone to just stop for a moment listening to this and appreciate the fact that the Dice Men have made a decision to stay here and do this show.
That was big of us.
That's very big of us, I think. We do it for love of this show and for love of you, our wonderful, wonderful listeners and downloaders. We love you the way you love us, and you've really got to love someone to stick them in your ears every week.
And, okay.
And now, here's a man I love to stick in holes in my body every week. It's Mark on the Dice Men Cometh show number 138
on the 13th of October 2016. Thank you, Trent. And we have a very exciting show coming up tonight. We're going to talk about one of the, I can't call it a new hotness because it's been around a couple of years, but boy is it hot. We're going to talk about Caverna, the cave farmers. But wait, there's more. We have a special guest in the studio here to talk about an amazing Kickstarter. It's our old friend, young friend, Tanya.
Thank you for a less colourful introduction than yours. I really appreciate it.
Honorary Dice Man, Tanya.
Dice Woman is, Tanya is back to talk about the Dracula's Feast Kickstarter. She's also going to tell us what she's been playing lately. We're going to talk about all the news, and I'm sure there's going to be some Essen news in there with Trent. And of course, we're going to remind you that we're in the last week of our competition. Veni, Vidi, Vici, Medici. All that and more coming up with the Dice Men Cometh.
Let's get noisy. This is a little band I know called Every Time I Die. I've just realised it's Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
You've just realised.
Dice Men Cometh with Trent, Mark and Tanya tonight. I've just realised I didn't mean to play that track at all. It's all the same. Every Time I Die with something from their new album, Low Teens. Anyway, it's not a show about music or metal. It's a show about board games and cargo. I haven't been on for a couple of weeks.
You haven't. We've let you back in, and look what happens straight away.
It's just off the rails right away. Have we been playing anything lately, boys and girls?
Trent, we played, must have been almost 3 weeks ago now, when we first played Caverna.
Oh my God.
The Cave Farmers by Uwe Rosenberg.
All right, now Tanya, you have a life.
Some say.
Yes. So you're it's fair to say that you're not necessarily into the deep end of the really, like,
you know, the heavy Euro called Sven.
Exactly.
Call me the party game girl.
Right. Yeah. So we're gonna come to a game that you've played in a moment or two.
A few, in fact.
But we've been dying to talk about Caverna.
Okay.
Which has been for what, 3 years?
So 2013 is when it came out, and we talked previously on episode 133 about Agricola, which was a big heavy Euro about farming for fun and profit. That one came out in
riveting.
I can't remember what it was. That 2009, 2008, and just had people who love these big heavy Euros, you know, not sitting down, except for the many hours that they sit down playing games, but, you know, out of their seats in excitement.
I know, but look, I'm like you, Tanya, right? Farming, really? Mm. Really? And can I just get this out of the way as well?
Yeah.
I've spent the last 3 years since Caverna came out saying cave farming.
Yeah.
Really?
I said cave
farming.
I said the same.
And can I say no one's corrected me for 3 years,
yeah,
right? Because it's not a game about farming in a cave, turns out. You're living in a cave in the game. You're a family of dwarves.
Well, it is.
And you have a cave. You can mine your cave and then plant stuff outside that.
It is strictly called Caverna, the Cave Farmers. The farmers do live in a cave.
Well, it's inappropriately labelled.
Anyway.
They're not out there ploughing the cave crops, though.
No.
Funnily enough, not. But so, Uwe Rosenberg had such a massive hit with Agricola. He thought, I'm on a good thing here, clearly, because he brought out another game that, until you really start to delve into it, it's almost identical to Agricola, but with a few things that change it up. And I know we sort of said, farming, But we have loved Agricola. It's really a great game. So much going on, but it is that because it's subsistence farming, you really are struggling from turn to turn just to keep your family alive, let alone start to make your farm flourish. Now,
I think it's fair to say I saw the appeal in Agricola, but it's quite crunchy and even a little bit outdated. This updates it,
yes,
streamlines the mechanics, but is it Agricola for dummies?
Well, sit down and shut up. Shut up and sit down called it Agricola 2.0, Agricola for modern man. And I guess when it came out in, and woman, of course, when it came in out in 2013, maybe it was. What he's done is he's basically redesigned Agricola. He's taken the cards. So in Agricola, the cards are occupations and improvements that you can play. And the game comes with these decks of cards where there's 300 cards, but you only see about, I think, about 14 of them in a game. So there's all this stuff you never discover. And, of course, then you've got to play it over and over and over to see all the different cards. He got rid of those completely, and now the cards are replaced by tiles, where there's a big board of tiles that sits out in the middle for everyone to see. Some of them there's multiple. Some of them there's only one of each. Everyone can see and everyone can choose. So in one way, it's great in that you don't know, well, I have no idea what Tanya's got in her hand, so what sort of strategies she's going to do, I don't know. Now it's all out in the open. But at the same time, you're looking out at this massive board of tiles with little iconography and little writing, trying to work out, okay, I've got some of this stuff. I've got some rubies. I've got some stone. What am I looking for next that's going to fit with what I've been doing?
I think it's fair to say that this is not a game for casual players.
Oh, no.
Even by gamers' standards, this is at the crunchy end.
Yeah, and so you've got your, almost in two separate parts, you've got your cave where you're building your residence, so you're growing your cave house so you can fit more family members, because your family members are your workers in the worker placement. And you start off with two, you can get up to six, but you've got to make room for them. Then also inside the cave, you can do mining. So you can mine for ore, which is spend to do stuff, and you can mine for rubies, which basically rubies are like a wild resource and more useful than ore,
and
but you've got to dig deeper.
You can also keep donkeys.
You can keep donkeys in your cave. And then you've got the outdoor part, which is where the farming happens. So you've got vegetables, you've got wheat, you've got your wild boars that you're domesticating, you've got, is it cows?
I don't remember.
Cows or horses.
Kangaroos.
You've got sheep, you use dogs to keep track of the sheep, and you're deforesting.
Oryx.
So you've got all that stuff happening
Badgers.
Outside. Then you've also got this, I don't know where it's come from, I don't know why it's there, but you've got this adventuring or expeditioning, which just, oh no, let's just say, it seems totally unnecessary, because what it is another way to get the various resources, where you have to arm up your workers and you send them on expeditions, but it's just a, if I have a X level expeditioner dwarf, then I can get this resource. Or if I have a Y level dwarf, I can get this resource. So it's really just another way of getting resources. But you have to arm them up to get them to particular levels.
So I disagree with your idea that it's superfluous,
yeah.
Because I found that to be a quite innovative little mechanic where it's a strategy to pursue that line of, you know, to arm up your dwarves in and of themselves. And it gives you a lot more flexibility in the sorts of resources that you're going to collect, I think.
Yeah, I know. I think it can give you access to resources quicker than you can get through the grafting away of farming them, perhaps. I don't know. It is a good way to supplement the things you're getting from other means. And it adds interest. But I don't know, I sort of felt thematically it didn't really fit. Like you're farming, you're living in a cave, but occasionally you go off to these amazing adventures where you find a cow or you find a lump of wood or, you know, a lump of coal. Or,
hey, listen, man, that sort of stuff was a big deal back in the Stone Age, right, before television. Right? There are still parts of Tasmania that are like that.
Absolutely.
We're going out and finding a cow one day. That's a big deal on the northwest coast.
I got to say, if I went out and found a cow, I'd be pretty excited. Like, well, that'd be on Twitter.
There you go.
So, and one of the things that was a criticism of Agricola is that in Agricola, you've got to do everything because all the bits you don't do, so getting all the animals, getting all the growing things, every one of those you don't do, you get negative points at the end of the game. Every bit of ground you don't cover in your area where you're living, you get negative points. That's been taken away in Caverna, where you can really specialize. So you can be the king of sheep, and you can have sheep and dogs and do whatever you like with sheep and dogs. Let's keep it legal. And you can get lots of points from that. Or you can dig in your mine with your donkeys and your children and get lots of rubies. And that's a legitimate strategy. And
hello to anybody who's just joined us. Hello to anybody who's just joined us on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We're talking about a board game.
That's right.
called Caverna.
But for each of these strategies, in these tiles that we talked about, there are ways to specialise and basically turn one type of resources into another, or turn sets of resources into victory points. And in Agricola, you had to do that through the cards. You've got the tiles, and that's part of the trick of looking at, okay, what's Trent up to? He's getting sheep and dogs and rubies. I can solve that's going to give me buku points for sheep wearing ruby necklaces. I better grab that because he is definitely going to take that, and that's going to give him a big advantage at the end. So you can sort of see the direction where people are going. You can see the tiles maybe they're going for, but as usual in a worker placement game, you've only got a small amount of actions you can take.
But there's a lot of moving parts, and I struggled to find a strategy through this as much as I was just trying to plan maybe two moves ahead at the most and just grabbing whatever sort of initially looked attractive. I didn't completely suck at this, but I'd struggle stitching together a strategy. What would you advise me to do?
See, I felt like I really had no idea what I was doing.
Oh, shut up. You won.
But the fact that I almost doubled both you and Garth sort of says maybe I did know. Maybe it's just the old gamer in me.
Love the way he points, the subtle way he points that out.
But for me, it was those end game victory. There's only a few end game victory point tiles. So I was focusing in on those. Okay, I need to direct myself so I can get those. It was also because, as I said, you start off with two dwarfs. You can get up to five. One person and one person only can get a sixth dwarf. And then there's also was a victory point tile that if you got the sixth dwarf and you got that tile, it gave you like 10 points, which was amazing. But you had to spend quite a bit of resources to do both of those things. I managed to do that, which really helped. Look, I've got to mention, Uwe has another farming game called Fields of Arl.
Where he's because two is not
exactly,
enough.
Exactly, where he's sort of refined this again. Arl in Germany or France or wherever it happens to be is where he's his hometown.
Right.
And he's done this sort of medieval farming theme, but it's different but the same, but it's only a two-player game.
I bet this guy's never even been near a farm or had dirt on his shoes.
Look, this is what I love. We developed all of the science and technology so we didn't have to farm anymore, and right. Now we play board games about farming.
That's right. That's
It's like he has a specialised sort of farming OCD, and he's just going to keep refining the farming systems until he gives up. I don't know. He's got another one called Aura and Labora, which has a few similarities. He's got La Havre. These games have a lot of similarities, but they're great games. And, you know, at the moment we've got both Agricola and La Havre, which are in the top 10 in Board Game Geek, or if Agricola's not in the top 10, it's just outside. So, look, we had a lot of fun with this. You played it again with Carl and Garth. You two struggled again as usual, and Carl came in over the top like he always
but
does.
Look, I still find it a bloody fun little slog.
Yeah,
and it is
little slog for what, 4 hours?
No, look, it is a bit of a slog, but it's one of those things where if you have the time and can turn your mind to it, I was actually quite impressed with how quickly it played as we were ripping through it once you got your head around it. But I'd absolutely prefer this to Agricola, and I'd play Caverna anytime.
Yeah, it's funny because
anytime I had 4 hours,
I want to go back to Agricola because I want to try a few of the different card sets. But you're right. Once you know the system, Agricola, La Havre, I'd say even Fields of Arlen, Caverna, you can play them all. This one apparently plays up to 7, which I can't imagine playing with 7. It would just take forever between turns. I don't think you'd want to play it with more than 4, maybe 5. But look, if you like your heavy Euros, this really, really scratches that itch. Caverna the Cave Farmers by Uwe Rosenberg.
I did find myself stuck on page 20 of the rule book. The rules on animal husbandry, I didn't quite.
Sure.
So what have you been playing lately, party girl Tanya?
Right, well, I've been playing fun games.
We're gonna find out about those in just a minute. It's The Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. 99.3 FM, Edge Radio, The Dice Man Cometh, and Palace Chasing the Light, as we continue to talk up the board gaming and card gaming hobby. And all sorts of fabulous games that you can get your hands on, and some that you can buy exclusively through Kickstarter right now, which may or may not have something to do with our special guest this evening, Dice Girl Tanya. Hello.
Hello.
We're talking about what we've been playing lately. You're a party girl gamer?
I certainly am. Basically, with my gaming nights, you know, everything has to be playable when you're a couple of wines in. So that's the bar
not
that we reach for.
Not necessarily a bad thing.
Yes.
Yeah, the bar literally and metaphorically.
Yeah, fair. So we've been playing a lot of Secret Hitler because we all got our copies from, you know, our various Kickstarter
Secret
efforts.
Hitler.
Secret Hitler. Yeah.
I know nothing about it. Just the name, I want to play it.
The name is brilliant. The graphic design is brilliant as well. It is a gorgeous looking game. It's a hidden identities game. One of you is Hitler. That's it in a nutshell. One of you is Hitler. You don't know who it is.
Yeah.
A couple of the others.
The moustache doesn't give it away.
Hitler's actually a lizard person in this game, which is a really bizarre touch that I just love.
Yeah.
I think maybe they sort of thought about it and thought it was a little bit distasteful just to paint a picture of Hitler on this game card. So they went, lizard man, that's going to do it. Two of the other players, maybe only one depending on the size of the crew, are fascists, and they know who Hitler is, but Hitler does not know who the fascists are. So the fascists are there to support Hitler.
So this is like Werewolf with the hidden identities.
Exactly. So there is a round at the beginning where everyone has to close their eyes, and it's like, if you're a fascist, open your eyes. If you're Hitler, you know, that kind of thing.
But the fascists are more than just the humdrum villagers.
Exactly.
Right.
Everyone else is a liberal, and they are essentially the humdrum villagers.
Ah.
But they have their own win condition. But anyway, the point is you've got these big boards in front of you. You have to put down a certain number of liberal policies or fascist policies to win the game. Now, if you're fascist, you want to win by putting down your 5 fascist policies. You don't want to be identified as a fascist in the process, though. So it's really, really...
Really?
You're a secret fascist, and, you know, you've got a secret Hitler. So it's really difficult to do. Each go, if you get elected as the president, so this is a whole election thing. I won't go into all of the details, but there's a number of choices in the game where you get to choose who's president and choose who's chancellor, and whoever is president gets to pick up these 3 tiles. They look at them and they pass 2 to the chancellor. Mm-hmm. It might be the other way around. But anyway, now those tiles may be fascist or liberal policies or a mix thereof. Now, if you're the president, only you know if you put back a tile and it was the only liberal policy and you've just passed 2 fascist policies to your chancellor. Your chancellor is then forced to put down a fascist policy, but your chancellor can kind of go, oh, it was passed 2, I had no choice. Or were they? Nobody else knows. So there's all of this suspicion going on, who's messing up with who, and you know, who's actually a fascist, whereas who just happened to draw 3 bad tiles. So the idea is, you know, whoever you're playing for, you want to win. And also, once it gets to a certain point, once there's enough fascist policies on the board, if Hitler happens to be made chancellor, he instantly wins.
And you mentioned the graphic design, and I should say all of this is with this fabulous sort of Third Reich-y art and those really Germanic fonts. That do look great.
Yeah, beautiful, like bold colours. They've.
I mean, say what you want about the Nazi Party, but they had some great fonts, didn't they?
Stylish, super stylish.
Yeah.
So it's great fun because it's just constant accusations and protestations of innocence, and it's also just marvellous to call your friends fascists really loudly.
So this straight away reminds me of the Resistance game.
Yeah.
Where you had hidden roles, and you had to play cards in order to put a team together for a mission.
Yeah.
So is it more or less the same kind of thing, or is there a twist on that?
It's a lot more streamlined. I think that just the simplicity of only having those two types of tiles in the game really just kind of streamlines that, and it makes this game mostly about the suspicion, less about the mechanics. They must have playtested the heck out of this, because it plays smoothly, and it's so well balanced. It's every game, it's a struggle to win for your side.
So Secret Hitler... another mate of ours has got this, has been itching to play. So
Yeah, I think Aiden has mentioned he has it. I'm really looking forward to playing it, that's for sure.
So again, it's another one in this sort of hidden role party game genre where a round might only take, 15 minutes to play or less sometimes. And I think since The Resistance came out and Werewolf had a bit of a resurgence, these have become more and more popular, which is obviously why... a little upstart startup gaming company called Jelly Bean Games, which we might hear a little bit about right now, has just launched a Kickstarter called...
Dracula's Feast.
Our longtime friend of the show, Tanya, you are the graphic designer for this little Kickstarter, which is available to back right now.
Yes, that's where I've been. I haven't been playing games or talking about games because I've been making one. So I'm the art director for Jelly Bean Games and also their illustrator. And our current project up on Kickstarter at draculasfeast.com is a hidden roles game. You could think of it a little bit like something like Coup, except... Okay, so we all know the problems people have with hidden roles games, right? Say you're playing One Night Werewolf. I don't know about you, but I always end up being the villager. And it's really boring. You don't have anything to do. You usually get kicked out straight away because for some reason people think I look shifty. So I just sit there and watch the game go by. And it's
Mark,
just not fun.
You have that problem as
look,
well,
I do often. It's the beard, I think. It makes me look quite werewolfish. I'm never the werewolf.
It's almost like no one likes you and everybody suspects you automatically.
It's just like, you know, I'm never, except for that time, a Cylon. I'm never a Cylon, but people always accuse me. I don't like to lie. I'm not a good liar. I go red in the face. I think people can spot it a mile away. So I really have to play up on it to put a doubt in people's mind, because otherwise I'm a hopeless liar. So am I going to be any good at this game?
Well, that's the other thing about Dracula's Feast is you don't have to lie. In fact, you can't lie unless you're playing one or two of the characters. So everyone is a monster, and the general idea is Dracula's thrown a feast. He's invited all the townspeople along for dinner, if you know what I'm saying.
Boom, boom.
Yeah. That's the feast.
It's a cookbook! It's a cookbook!
So all of these other monsters have gotten wind of this devious plan, and they've gatecrashed the party wearing their little, you know, masks and hiding their identities.
Right.
Ooh. So each of you, as a player, you are a monster. You don't know who all the other monsters around the table are. It is your job to figure out who is who before they figure you out. And the way you do that in Dracula's Feast is each monster has their own separate win condition. Now, there's standard ways for everyone to win the game, but there are also, you know, your own way to win the game often. So you watch what other people do and what they don't do. Keep track of that, and it will gradually begin to illuminate who might be who around the table.
But you were taking us through this earlier, and one of the things I really liked about it is, you know, so many of these hidden role games are based on sort of deductive logic and memory. But you've got some little memory aids in this one, because let's face it, after a wine or two at Dracula's
my
Feast,
my memory is awful.
It's
so
a problem, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, right? Exactly. So I would be at a disadvantage with a game like this, except we've done this lovely thing where, so, you know, say you've got four players in the game. That means there's five cards in the game, because there's always a secret guest as well, just to shake things up a bit so you can't use pure logic to figure out who is who. We have these accusation cards which correspond to the characters in the game. So we might have Dracula, Werewolf, Zombie, and Van Helsing, Alucard in the game. We will put the corresponding cards out in the middle of the table so at a glance you can see who the five monsters are that you're trying to figure out, essentially. The accusation cards are also there to accuse people. So, you know, if I think that you're Dracula, I'm going to slide the Dracula accusation card across the table to you. If I'm wrong, I'm out of the game. If I'm right, you're out of the game.
Yep.
And there's other mechanisms in it as well. You can question someone, so you can say, Are You Dracula? And they have these little yes and no cards. So if it is Dracula, they pass back the yes, and you're like, okay, I know that now. I'm going to keep that in my little noggin. Or they pass back the no, and you're like, okay, I'm on the wrong track there. You can dance with another player, which is when it's basically, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. So, you know, you swap cards, have a little peeksy. Now you know who each other are.
I never get invited to these kinds of parties.
Just leave your keys in the bowl. Now you know who each other are, but you cannot accuse. So accuse is the way you boot players out one by one. You know, right. If you correctly accuse someone, they're gone. But the grand reveal is the way you want to win, really. The grand reveal is when you think you figured out who everyone at the table is. You, on your turn, you go, okay, I'm doing a grand reveal. Grab your accusation cards and lay them out in front of each person, corresponding to what monster you think they yep. are.
So you think you know who everyone is.
You think you know. So okay. You're like, I'm just going to blow this party wide open. Now, everyone then secretly slides you a yes or a no card, you know, depending on whether you're right or not. You take up those cards and secretly have a look. And if they're all yeses, you have won. You are the monster extraordinaire, the dominant beast. But if there's a single no in there, then you've got it wrong somewhere and you are out of the game, leaving others to.
I really like that with the yes and no cards, because often in this game, in these types of games, you've only got one shot at guessing. And if you get it wrong, then it's the end of the game because all the information is out there in public. But this way, you're the only one, when you pick up those cards, you're the only one that's going to know, oh my God, there was only one no in there, or oh my God, there was four no's in there. I was nowhere near it. No one else is going to know.
Exactly.
And the game can still keep going with them. I love that touch.
Yeah. And just the way it works is, you know, people tend to be really cautious about doing early accusers because it's so easy to knock yourself out if you're wrong. Mm. So you don't get that thing that you get in Werewolf where you can get knocked out really early in the game and just sit there twiddling your thumbs, you know?
So last week on the show, we mentioned that this had just gone live on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. In fact, it funded just over 24 hours, didn't it? Which
it did.
Was amazing for, I know it's the second Kickstarter that this group has done. Now, it's not called Jelly Bean on here, it's called Bluebeard.
Yeah.
What's the relationship between those two?
So Peter C. Haywood runs Jelly Bean, and he also runs a number of other sort of side projects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he writes, he does a little filmmaking. Yeah. He's a man with many hats.
Yes.
So Bluebeard sort of covers everything that he does.
Okay.
Jelly Bean is specifically the games. And,
right.
And Jelly Bean is quite specific in its mission too. We do games that families can play together.
Yep.
So that doesn't mean that they're those horrible little sort of kiddie games where the adults kind of just sit there looking at their watches, you know. These are games that are clever enough for adults to want to play with each other when the kids aren't around, but that the kids can be a part of if they're there. You know?
And you're also big on inclusivity.
Yes.
Where I noticed your Van Helsing character is depicted as a woman.
Yes, exactly.
In this, and it is just a little deck of cards.
Yeah.
And maybe another smaller deck in the yes or no cards hand out as
well. So you've got your
well.
Character cards, yes, no cards, and your accused cards.
Which explains why this is priced at just $9 US.
I know. I thought I'd misread it or that there was a mistake or something.
Yep, only $9 US.
And it's 50 bucks postage, yeah, is that right?
No, it is not. It is not. It's a truly good deal, but the best deal, if you ask me, and I'm not biased at all. No, but seriously, the best deal back at the $14 amount, because we also have an expansion, the Cthulhu expansion. That adds
quite of course.
The characters. Obligatory Cthulhu expansion.
Of course. Yep. He's adorable. He's peeking through a window because he's a Cthulhu. He's not going to like fit in the building, so it's just like this window with a sad little Cthulhu peeking through, just holding his tiny mask on a stick in one tentacle.
So
that's funny.
Look, I just want to ask you about your role in Jelly Bean and in this case Bluebeard as graphic designer. First up, the art looks great.
Thank you.
You've got, it's kind of a little bit of Tim Burton going on in there.
Yeah, it's based on
and you're a former Disney artist. We should also point that out.
It's true.
You're professional. You know what you're doing.
Yep, I'll cop to that.
Yep. All right, so what are you going for with the art in this?
All right, so we specifically based it on this American illustrator who has passed away now, Edward Gorey, and he did all these sort of cute, creepy, monstery kind of things. He's actually quite famous for having done a version of Dracula where they did a stage play and all of the props were blown up illustrations of his, and it's pen and ink. It's all very kind of, it's creepy, but it's cute at the same time, and that's the vibe we were going for.
I was going to say, because I'm getting this sort of etchings vibe, you know, come upstairs and see my etchings. But you know, there's a comedy side to this.
Yes.
And it's, I must admit, though, Tanya, like, I've seen a bit of your art on all different projects you've done. Your versatility is amazing because this looks like nothing like you've I've ever seen you do before. And it's fantastic.
Thank you. Well, I am also a woman of many hats,
you
stylistically.
Are.
And it was actually, I had a devil of a time, no monster pun intended. We actually have Beelzebub in one of these decks, by the way.
Really?
Yes, I had a devil of a time getting this style right. It's quite different, as you've noticed, from what I normally do. It's quite detailed. I mean, just the hatching alone, I'm pretty sure I've actually started to see cross-hatching when I close my eyes.
So how does this work in terms of, because you're a freelance graphic designer and artist.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a bill for your time, but obviously this is a Kickstarter set at a very, very low price point.
Mm-hmm.
You're working, I'm always interested in people who are using the internet for their career, because it's creating this whole new kind of economy that we're seeing in the crowdfunding model. How does all that come together with you, given that you and Peter, who runs Jelly Bean, aren't even in the same country?
Oh, well, we do all our work over Slack, which is sort of one of those online sort of big chat room kind of things, mm-hmm. specifically for businesses that are structured like this. And it's not just Peter and I. We've got another fellow, Tom Lang, who sort of... he does all the pedantic stuff, like making sure the wording is right, doing a lot of play testing, you know, making sure that everything runs smoothly.
Mm.
We've got a actual graphic designer, Daryl, because I do the art direction, I do the art, but Daryl sort of does the text and the layout, that sort of thing. And we're all in different places. Tom's in Sydney, Daryl's in America, Peter's currently in Canada.
Did you know each other beforehand? Or?
Yes, Peter and I met in Brisbane when I sold him a refrigerator. That's our meet cute.
Of course, of course.
But yeah, no, I actually work, 3 days a week for Jelly Bean. I get paid a steady rate to do that.
Right.
And he's able to pay me because of the success of the previous Kickstarter, Scuttle. That did really, really well. It did almost $90,000 on Kickstarter.
So, wow.
Yeah, we basically, each time we have a successful Kickstarter, this is our model, we use it to fund the next game.
Okay, okay.
And we like to develop the game and have it finished by the time the Kickstarter runs so that we can send it off to the printer and begin to deliver it like really quickly for a Kickstarter.
So in that case, it's clear that Jelly Bean has actually got its act together. You've got a business plan. You're putting out X number of products per year. You're planning ahead and trying to set targets with your Kickstarters. And good for you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. And look,
I mean, I just make it look pretty. Peter is responsible for all of the, you know, making everything happen.
Are you helping out with the Kickstarter itself?
I do,
the hands-on stuff?
Yeah, I did some of the graphics for it, and, you know, I jump into the comments and chat. So, hey, if any of you are out there going to back it, you know, feel free to ask me questions in the comments on the Kickstarter.
And look, 1,290 people have backed it.
This is true.
It's already up to almost 30,000, whereas we said the original funding goal was 8. Still got 29 days to go. This thing, when's it? It's got to get over 100,000, surely.
That's what we're hoping for. We actually have a little betting pool running behind the scenes, Jelly Bean Games, where we've all done little predictions.
So usually with these very low-priced games, because you've got to get so many backers to get to a large level, they usually struggle. This is going berserk. So look, whatever you guys are doing, it is working, and it is working a treat. So congratulations.
Thank you. We are loving it.
Dracula's Feast is on Kickstarter. You can also just go to...
Draculasfeast.com, and it'll take you straight there.
Straight there, and you can look for more from Jelly Bean Games from the sounds of it. I haven't done game news. We'll do that next. That's coming up. It's Edge Radio, the Dice Men Cometh, 99.3 FM.
That was if he ever finishes. That was the great Iggy Pop.
If he ever finishes, listen to you.
He was interrupting me. So Iggy Pop with Vultures from his new album, where he's worked with Josh Homme. Sounding pretty good there, Iggy. And you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, we've got news coming up, Trent. But before you talk about your news, I want to talk about something I saw in the news today, as in our local newspaper.
Oh, yes.
So often they do these little giveaways. They had a comic book one recently.
Oh, yeah.
They've done CDs. What are they giving away now over the next 20 days or so? Board games.
What?
A miniature board game. You pay $5 or something. You know, you go down to the local news agency and you get it each day. There's a big box you can put them in. of course, there was such a chance he'd actually have some great games. But what have they gone with? Gee, what a surprise. Connect Four, Battleship, Monopoly, Boggle, Twister, Yahtzee, Mini Trivial Pursuit. I'll be interested to see that. Operation, Clue or Cluedo, Guess Who, all these classic old games, which, you know, most of us playing games have left behind 20 or 30 years ago. But the News Limited, they're taking them out to the masses in tiny little versions, I guess for $5 a game. Hey, people are going to be playing games at least. That's the good thing about it, maybe.
All right, time for some gaming news. Tanya, can you join us in the theme music for game news? It goes like this. Hasbro has moved us all a step closer to the apocalypse with the announcement of a new stage show based on the board game Clue.
Oh.
Or Cluedo, as we know it. This will tour the US of A in 2017. And, you know, with a few snappy musical numbers, this could be a big hit and end up being like the new Lion King or Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Okay.
How bad could it be? How bad could it be?
Have you seen the movie with Tim Curry?
It's a classic.
Amazing.
Oh, yes. Yes. Leon had did a review of that movie and raved about
it. It's the same director who's coming on board to adapt it to a stage play.
I'm in.
And look, at a future point, I would like us all to... at least there's a story, okay, with Clue. Unlike the upcoming Monopoly musical.
Oh, really?
All right, which is still a thing. That's gonna happen, okay? And at a future point, Mark, as the show's resident pun master,
yeah,
I want you to come up with a series of song titles for the Monopoly musical, please.
Okay.
Like, you know, I don't know how to tax him. Or Circle of Life, do not pass go, do not collect $100.
Or the jazzy pop number, get out of jail free.
Yeah, or anything from Rent.
Yeah, we pave paradise, go to the free parking lot.
I said anything from Rent. Okay. could the Pathfinder RPG be in its death throes?
Oh, no.
You don't think so?
No. Never.
Is the success of D&D pushing the Paizo product off the shelves?
Really?
One could argue that. Well, of course, Pathfinder only sort of filled in the gap that D&D vacated with 4th edition sucked so much. Well, Paizo is seeing the wind is changing, and they've introduced a Pathfinder Society program to encourage retailers to actually stock the product on the shelves, because it's actually shrinking in shelf space, apparently. There's somebody out there measuring this stuff. So under this program, if you're playing in-store as a part of this Paizo program, a player can go and make any in-store purchase, be it a game, mm-hmm. be it a Pathfinder product, be it a can of Coke. And they can then take the receipt to the GM to get a bonus in the game.
Wow.
$10 will get you 5 bonus hit points. $50 will get you 10.
Oh.
Gee, it sort of feels...
like bribing the GM.
100%.
Because I know, one of the things about D&D is they always had the organized play where they had regular campaigns coming out and they had sort of special giveaways and things like that that you could get by being part of that, and sort of by leveling up you got extra bonus stuff. But it was all related to D&D, and I guess it didn't, well, at least maybe it didn't, cost the retailers. I buy a pie. I mean, it sort of, in a way, makes sense. I buy a pie and I get some hit points back.
I don't know, man. I think eating pies should make you lose hit points.
Yeah. Ooh. Now, Tanya, you're a Sherlock and Holmes fangirl from
way back. He was my first literary crush.
Way back. And
I'm a huge nerd.
And there's so many games.
Yes, well, I think they've really missed an opportunity here. Why are none of the games called A Foot? Because the game is afoot. It's the obvious choice. Don't look at me like that.
Asmodee are about to release a new Watson and Holmes deduction game from Space Cowboys early next year. I always imagine this is a little bit awkward because, of course, the guys who started Space Cowboys, this French game company, are the same people
who... Belgians, aren't they?
What's the difference?
Oh, are so sorry to all our Belgian listeners.
They're a lot of Belgian listeners.
The same people who actually started Asthmaday back in the day. All right. So I can imagine those conversations are really awkward. You know, it's like, oh, sure, Mark, your new game is really, really good. Yeah, sure, we'll publish it. maybe not. Anyway,
I'm so sorry, Belgians.
Holmes and Dr. Watson is a competitive deduction game, and it looks a little bit friendlier than the consulting detective game, which you have a copy of.
Leon has. I love it, and I can't wait to play it again, even if it's only to show me how stupid I am compared to Sherlock.
Speaking of Asmodee, they clearly think they're on to a winner with the upcoming retail release of the Conan board game, which was kickstarted to huge success. This game will be out for Christmas, and two new expansions have already been announced for early in the new year, and Asmodee is unashamedly putting a price tag of over $100 US on this one. That's for the entry game.
I was going to say, that is a lot. I mean, we here in Australia, we're used to paying $100 or more for games because they're games that would retail in America for, you know, $60 or $65. But $100 US is a big price point. There are not many board games that people like us play that are more than $100 US, so that's for sure.
But if they stick the Conan name on it, they figure
either
that or it's bloody good. Hey, when you said fantasy football, I thought you meant...
Lingerie League?
No.
Oh.
For anyone who's ever wanted to use fantasy miniatures to play American football...
Oh, so Blood Bowl.
Guild Ball.
But Blood Bowl came out in the 80s.
Yes, but this...
And was sort of like Warhammer playing Gridiron.
But this redeploys it as a miniatures game with the booster packs and all of that stuff.
So it's collectible now as opposed to you go and buy your figures and you sort of make it yourself.
Guild Ball from Steam Forge Games. It's a thing. What do we think of the tabletop gaming show going behind a paywall? I know you mentioned this last week.
Yeah, well, we only touched on it briefly.
Do you watch Tabletop?
I heard about this, but I haven't watched it for a while now.
I don't bother.
That's the reason I bought Betrayal at House on the Hill, to be fair.
Okay.
So they sold me something.
Okay.
I loved every minute of the first season. Mm. I loved about two-thirds of the second season. The third season, I think I loved about half, was very hit and miss. And I know the first two seasons were funded by YouTube. The third season was crowdfunded. And now they've gone to a not a pay-per-view, but a sort of, I guess, the Netflix model where you pay a monthly subscription and weekly episodes will come out. I mean, I guess they've got to fund it some way because, let's face it, like making television, high-end television, is very, very expensive.
Tabletop is hardly high-end television.
Well, I guess what I'm talking about where you've got more than the podcast equivalent of, you know, one guy with a camera and a woman on the other side or vice versa. You know, when you've got sound people and lighting people and makeup people and, you know, you've got a cast of, not thousands, but you've got a cast of tens in making these shows.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Netflix because, I mean, that's shown that a paywall doesn't have to be a disincentive.
Yeah.
Providing it's easy and there's good content and it's accessible. And this is going to be part of this thing called the Alpha Network. And this is actually, looking reading between the lines, this is actually a big deal, this Alpha Network.
Yeah.
This is backed by Legendary Films, who, I mean, they gave us the recent Batman trilogy and, you know, these guys
they're
aren't
fly-by-nighters.
Looking about. Yeah. And they've also not
except
only
maybe Batman.
Bought the content. They've not only bought the content from Geek and Sundry, they've also bought the Nerdist material as well.
Yeah.
I'd pay to watch Jessica Chobo do just about anything.
Oh, yep.
Right? Eat a bowl of rice noodles. Right? I'll give you $9 a month.
Yeah, but I'd pay to not watch Will Wheaton do anything.
Yes. I know.
Will doesn't listen to this, right?
Hi, Will. Sorry.
Hi, Will. Number one fan.
At least Will's not Belgian. Otherwise, we'd be really in trouble.
The big question is, how is this going to affect the retailers, and particularly this season, for all of those retailers who placed orders for this season's games before the paywall was announced, which I thought was a bit crafty.
Yeah, and I think, for me, that's going to be the most interesting part is, how it's going to water down the tabletop effect, the Will Wheaton effect, because we've seen sales of some of the games, not all of them, but some of the games they've featured just gone absolutely berserk.
It's the Oprah Book Club effect.
Exactly, yeah. Purely because they're on tabletop.
And that's the news. Quick reminder about the competition on our website, dicemencometh.com. What have we got?
So we've got the Veni, Vidi, Vici, Medici competition, which is very cornily named. But if you translate the Latin, of course, it means I came, I saw, I won Medici, and that's what we want you to do. We want you to win a copy of the great Rainer Canizia game Medici, reprinted by Grail Games. It is a beautiful looking game. Tanya, have you seen this new version of Medici?
I've been locked in a room drawing art for 6 months.
Well, you'd like it. And so how, you ask, do you win a copy of Medici? You go to our website, dicemencometh.com, and you have to explore. And somewhere hidden amongst all the pages of this massive website that mostly Trent and I have put together is something relating to the game Medici. When you find this something and you click on this something, it will automatically open up an email and send it to us saying you'd like to be in the competition. Although it gives you the option of filling in some feedback about our website, which we'd love to hear, particularly from someone like you, knows a thing or two about websites.
Well, hilariously, we actually did get some feedback from some guy who's like clearly like a high-end website designer.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, this is just a WordPress thing that we've kind of stuck together with sticky tape. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's pretty shit, really. But we like it.
Except most of the people have said, hey, we really like your website, which we think means we've got really polite listeners. But so you go there, you click on the Medici thing, it will launch an email or not, because apparently it hasn't worked for some people. It emails us, you're entered in the competition. You've got a week left from today, so the podcast will probably go up generally it goes up over the weekend sometime, depending on whether people are speaking to each other or not.
Hi, Garth.
And we're going to close it on midnight, Wednesday, the 19th of October. So we'll close off all the thousands of emails then, and we'll draw it on the show on Thursday, the 20th of October. We have two copies of Medici from Grail Games. Thank you so much to them, and it is a beautiful-looking edition, to send out to people wherever in the world they might be listening. We will send their copy of Medici, thanks to Grail Games, because they're going to pay for the postage. Don't hold back. It is a great game. That's probably about all I've got to say. Tanya, have you got anything left to say?
Ciao, mofos.
And draculasfeast.com.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Hey, thank you again for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
No, it's really, really good to have you in here, and good to hear somebody who's actually kicking goals in the industry and kicking games.
I don't kick games.
Speaking of our website, we could use a little bit of a graphic design touch-up on it.
I'm very expensive.
And
on that note,
and maybe an article or two as well. And you know what? I was just thinking. We need a new page on there. We should really figure out what our favorite games are, and like a top 10 or a top 20 or 50 something.
Yeah.
That's going to get the comments rolling in. People love to disagree with those things.
I know. And if there's one thing I love, it's an argument.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to go off and have one right now. this has been The Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
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 This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.